This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 260.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about how to turn failure into success. But before we get to the main part of the show, I just wanted to remind you about my live event, Media Influence Live. So it's happening in London on July the 5th and 6th. And this is my annual event where I get journalists and influencers in a room with you for a day so you can really understand what it takes to get coverage in newspapers, magazines, and on radio and TV. But also how you can get high-profile media coverage on podcasts, on YouTube channels, and also how you can make your own media. So how you might be able to make your own magazines, your own online publications in order to promote your brand more effectively. So I'm really excited about the speakers that I've got booked for you this year. So I've got journalists from the likes of The Guardian, from Grazia magazine, from The Sun's Fabulous magazine, from ITV's Good Morning Britain, and also BBC Radio 5 Live. And I've also got media influencers in the wider sense. So I've got Emma Gannon, who is the host of the Control Alt Delete podcast, a really fantastic example of somebody who is making her own media and then attracting traditional media coverage, so coverage in newspapers, magazines, and on radio and TV as a result of her own podcast. I've also got Jess Dante, who's going to be talking about how to basically make your own TV show. So she is building her business on the basis of her YouTube channel. She'll be talking about that. And also I've got Charlotte Jackman, who has built up a really successful business from, again, creating her own media, her own online magazine. So if you've ever been to any of my events, you'll know that they are not the kind of events where you just turn up, you listen to the speakers, and they go off again and you never see or hear from them again. I ask all of my speakers to stick around and I ask them to sit on the tables with you so that you can chat to them over lunch, between sessions, over break times. And we also have on day one a really fantastic speed networking session. So you'll get to meet every speaker and you'll be able to introduce yourself and ask them personal questions. Now, day two of the event, if day one is about giving you the information that you need to get high profile media coverage, day two is about the consolidation. So it's actually about how you put that into practice. So I introduced day two a few years back because I've been running a similar style event for quite a few years. And what I was finding is that people were coming along and having an amazing experience meeting all of the journalists, but then they go away and they go, okay, well, what do I do with this? And how do I put together a strategy? And how do I actually pitch myself? And there will be lots and lots of tips about that. You'll get loads of tips on day one about how to pitch yourself, how to find journalists, how to really kind of make that connection. But actually, I felt, and certainly the feedback has been, that having a day for consolidation, so to go more in depth on pitching, to go more in depth on actually putting together a strategy for all of this, people really, really benefit from that. So I've also got some fab speakers for you on day two. So I've got Jessica Lorimer, the sales expert, and she's going to be talking about how you can get used to being seen, because I know for lots of you, when it comes to getting coverage in newspapers, magazines, radio and TV, or even having your own podcast or YouTube channel, there are sometimes sort of issues that you have to get over in terms of being seen and, you know, putting your ideas out there in public. And Jess is going to help with that. I've also got my good friends, Andrew and Pete, and they're going to be talking about how you can get anyone to say yes to you. So how you can really secure those high profile opportunities with journalists and influencers. So you get yourself in the big podcasts, get yourself in newspapers, magazines, radio and TV, secure the big speaking gigs, the big collaborations. They're fantastic at doing that for themselves, which is why I thought it would be ideal to get them to come along. So if the event sounds of interest, I'll put a link to the show notes. But as this episode goes live, we will literally only have a few days left of the early bird prize. So if you're interested in coming along, then don't forget to book your ticket. And now on with the main part of the show. Four weeks ago, I pulled out of the London Marathon. I've been training for the event for months, but on the day it was unusually hot. In fact, it was the hottest London Marathon on record, and I began to feel unwell about 3 to 4 miles into the race. At 12 miles, I was starting to suffer the symptoms of heat exhaustion, so I made the very difficult decision to pull off and to pull out of the race. I was absolutely gutted. Not only had I been training for the event for months, but I've also raised over £4,000 for my chosen charity, the Ectopic Pregnancy Trust. And I just went through so many different emotions. One of the worst things for me was I felt like I'd quit. I felt like I'd pulled out of something when the going had got tough. And as somebody who doesn't regard myself as a quitter, I just found that really, really hard to take. So I just wanted to share with you that yesterday I ran the Liverpool Marathon. I completed it in 4 hours 28. Wasn't a personal best or the time that I was hoping for. But guess what? There was a heat wave in Liverpool yesterday. In fact, it was hotter in Liverpool than it was in London. So I was facing very, very similar conditions to those that I was facing on the day of the London Marathon. But having had the experience that I'd had at London, I was able to react differently to the situation and I was able to get a very different outcome. Not the one that I'd hoped for, but for me, a much, much better outcome. And I was able to demonstrate, I guess, that I'd taken some learning from London and I'm already feeling a lot better about what happened. So in episode 252, I shared the experience that I go through when I suffer a setback in order to turn things around. So I thought it might be useful for me in this episode to share how I've turned things around over the last 4 weeks and to share my process for turning a failure into a success. So I'm going to break down that process for you, just like I did in episode 252. And if you haven't listened to it already, it's well worth going back to have a listen to. I've had a lot of really positive feedback about that episode, and lots of you have said you found it really, really helpful. But what I'm going to do in this episode is, first off, I'll give you a bit of context, a bit of background, and then I'll break down the process that I've been through over the last 4 weeks. And I hope there will be some nuggets in there that you can use to help you turn failures into successes. So first off, a bit of background. So as I shared in episode 252, I was absolutely gutted by what happened. I just couldn't believe it. Not only had I pulled out of a race, I'd never pulled out of a race before, but it was a really big, important race. I was raising money for charity. It was all very public. And I was kind of shell-shocked by what had happened, really. But I chatted back and forth in the hours that followed with my running coach, Lynn, and I think she knows me quite well. And it wasn't long before she mooted the idea that the best thing I could do would be to run another marathon and do it soon. So by 9 a.m. the next morning, I was booked into the Liverpool Marathon. Within a day or so, Lynn had sent me my new training plan. And by the following Sunday, I was back out doing 14 miles, then up to 18, back down to 14 again. If you've ever done a marathon, you'll know that you have to build up your mileage and then drop it back down. So having just worked right up to a marathon, I kind of had to build my mileage back up and then back down again in 4 weeks. So it was quite tough. I just had to get back out there and get into the training. And obviously my body was pretty tired by that stage. I had lots of blisters, my feet were sore. I've had lots of problems over the last few months with tendonitis. I've got an old plantar fascia tear, an old injury in my other foot. So it was quite tough to get back out there, but I really felt that was what I needed to do. And I remember saying to Lynn, the only thing that I know how to do when something like this happens is to take action. And I feel the one thing that's going to make me feel better is to know that I'm taking action and I'm doing something. And for me, it felt a little bit like having a car accident. If you've ever had a car accident, you'll know that one of the most important things that you can do after your accident, however afraid you feel, is to get back in the car and drive. Otherwise, there is a chance you may never drive again or even be a passenger. I mean, I had a really bad car accident back in 1995 and I didn't do that. And actually, it took me a lot to even be comfortable as a passenger again. So I learned from that experience many, many years ago. So I felt it was important that I got back in the driving seat and I've got a place for London next year. I didn't want to get on the start line next year with this kind of really negative experience hanging over me. So I thought I just need to get out and do this and I need to finish. So when Lynn suggested it, that was one of the reasons why I was like, yep, I definitely want to do that. And by 9 a.m. the next day, I was entered for the Liverpool Marathon. Quite a different marathon. London's very flat. Liverpool from the profile looked like it was much hillier. But of course, when there's hills, there's also downhill. So it wasn't quite the marathon that I've been training for. But Liverpool is my home city. It's where I was born and where I spent the first part of my life, and most of my family are or were. And so it felt like a really special place for me to do a marathon as well. So before I break down how I turned that failure into a success, a little bit about how the race went yesterday. So over the last 3 or 4 weeks, I have been obsessively looking at the weather for Liverpool. And in the last week or so, it became apparent that it was getting hotter and hotter in Liverpool. And we were going to be looking at temperatures like about 22, possibly 23 degrees. And you may remember if you listened to episode 252, that when I was unpicking what had happened and some of the things I could have done differently at London, one of the things that I thought about was maybe I could have pulled out maybe when I saw how hot it was going to be at London. And I think it was predicted to be about 24 degrees at London, that I could have pulled out. So I ended up actually about a week ago in the same situation with Liverpool, looking at the weather and thinking, oh my God, should I pull out? Because it's going to be, if not as hot, almost as hot as Liverpool. And I kept looking at the weather and hoping it was going to change, but it just actually kept getting hotter. Every time I looked, they would add a degree to it. And I was just thinking, oh God. But I decided that I was going to go for it anyway, and I would just use the experience that I had at London to see if I could manage the situation better. I didn't really want to compromise on my time, and I didn't really want to go out slower because I've been working towards this particular time for like actually the best part of a year. But I thought I've just got to get out there and I've got to try. So over the past week or so, it was getting hotter and hotter. Actually, when I got to the start line yesterday morning, it wasn't too bad because Liverpool's on the river. So there was a bit of a breeze and I didn't think it was going to be too bad. It certainly didn't feel as bad as London, but that was only at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I knew that by about midday, it could be much hotter. So we set off. I actually had quite a good first 9 or 10 miles. Much hillier than I trained for at London, and that did take it out of me a little bit, these hills. But it was a really great run, and it was fun because we ran around Goodison Park, so Everton's football club, and we actually ran through Anfield, Liverpool's football club. And it was great to see Liverpool in a way that I hadn't seen it before. So I really enjoyed the first maybe 11 miles or so. But 11 or 12 miles into the race, it started to get hard because it started to get pretty hot again. And I started to find myself feeling a bit like I did at London. There were some quite tricky hills around that particular part of the race. And I'd been bang on time for my target time up until that point. And then my time dropped. I could see that my body was starting to struggle again. So this was almost like a turning point after what happened at London. So at 12 miles, things just got too much. It all came to a head and I stopped. But what I did at this stage instead is I slowed down. I could see that my body was slowing down. I was starting to find it hard. So I just went with it. And I just went with the time that my body felt comfortable with. And I tried to keep it as quick as I could, but I just went with it. So the next sort of stretch, maybe the next 4 miles or so, it was pretty tough. I was really, really thirsty, and I was feeling quite similar to how I did at London, actually, where I was drinking water, but it just wasn't really helping whatsoever. And by about 16, 17 miles, I actually had to kind of come off and take a bit of a break at the side of the road to get some water, to kind of get myself together. And I mean, this is awful. I've never, ever done this in a race ever. And actually, I can be quite scathing at people who do this, but I had to walk basically. So for the last 6 to 8 miles, I had to employ a bit of a walk run strategy because I was just feeling so dreadful and so bad that it felt like it was the only way that I could get through to the end. But it was quite interesting, actually. There was a girl that I was running alongside for most of the race. And I've always been quite scathing about people who walk in races, and some people walk run whole marathons. I'm like, how could you do that? You know, not only would it mess with your head, but actually, surely if you haven't run it, you haven't run it. But actually, I was taking sections of it and I was walking sections of it and then running. And actually, I kept catching back up with this girl. So it was quite an interesting learning experience for me to kind of see that and see how actually by holding back and preserving a bit of my energy, I was able to then do a stretch at a kind of faster pace and not actually impact on my time too much. Now, at this stage, I was hoping for a time of 4:10. I'd already lost the 4:15 pacer. So I'd already had to accept that I wasn't going to be able to make my target time. But actually, I was feeling okay with it because inside I had this mentality that I had just had to finish. Like I had to finish this race. I had to put it to bed and I had to manage how bad I was feeling and just get through to the end. So that's exactly what I did. I took time off. So a couple of times I actually came off the course to drink, to kind of gather myself, which I didn't do at London. I've never done in any other race. And basically I went with, what I did differently is I went with the heat conditions. I responded and I took the time when I needed it. Now, I think over the next few days or weeks, I think I'll still be beating myself up slightly and wondering whether I could have pushed through it. Like, and there was one point when I saw somebody had a t-shirt on their back that said something like, something about running being more mental than physical. And I did have certain sections of the race where I was thinking, I was beating myself up and saying, come on, you know, you're just not mentally strong enough for this. Like, why are you walking? You know, why can't you just push yourself through? But at the time, I was feeling so, so dreadful that it was just like preservation. I just had to get myself through to the end of the race. So I had a section there between about 18, 24 miles when I was having a kind of walk-run strategy going. And actually, as I say, this girl that I've been running alongside for the whole of the race, I actually kept getting in front of her by doing this. So it kind of worked. And then when I got to the last couple of miles, I decided, right, I'm just going to give it all I've got and I'm going to completely run to the finish. My daughter and my husband popped up at about 25 miles, which was lovely. And my daughter actually ran some of the way to me. And I said to her, oh, Katie, this has just been so hard. But it was lovely to see her. And she was encouraging me and she ran alongside me for quite a section of it. And I made it to the finish line. Now, I actually made it to the finish line in 4 hours 28. My personal best on a marathon is 4:25. So I was kind of a bit annoyed with myself that I couldn't even manage to just scrape in under my personal best. But given the circumstances, given the heat, given the fact I was running in another heat wave, I would say it was maybe a degree or so cooler than London, but there wasn't much in it. And it was maybe cooler in the morning, but by the time we got to the midday sun, 2 o'clock, it was just beating down the sun and it was really difficult. So I think all things considered, I didn't make the time of 4 hours 10 that I've been aiming for this year. But actually, compared to London, I think some of my pals from my running club, some of them were half an hour or an hour lower than what they were expected to do. So I think I didn't do too badly. And the most important thing for me, I think, was that I finished. I just needed that experience of finishing the race and proving to myself, I think, that even when the going got tough, I could somehow put it all together and I could get myself to that finish line. I've run 4 marathons now. And in the first 3, I didn't walk a step. So that's an interesting one to ponder over, because like, I was beating myself up a bit afterwards about the fact I had to walk some sections of it. But it did feel that it was kind of self-preservation, because I was so uncomfortable. I was feeling so unwell again in the heat, feeling sick. And it got me through. And I think yesterday was about finishing, and it was about proving to myself that I could mentally just double down and I could get the job finished. So although it's disappointing that I think in 2018 I'm not going to hit my marathon time, I've learned so many lessons, I think, that I'll be able to put into practice for 2019. So overall, I think it was a successful experience, and I feel like I did turn a failure into success. So I just want to break down for you the process that I go through. And this is a process that I use in business as well. So when things don't go as well as I'm hoping in business, this is the process that I tend to go through. And I thought you might find it useful to hear it. There might be some nuggets in there that you can use next time you have something that doesn't go quite so well for you in your business. So the first thing I do, and I talked a lot about this in episode 252, so go back and have a listen to that one if you haven't done already. But the first thing I do when something goes wrong, when I have a big setback, is I analyse my part in what went wrong. I don't shy away from blame. In fact, I think I say in that episode that I think self-blame is my friend, because facing up to your part in what happened, yes, in a marathon situation, if it's really hot, that is an external factor. It's something that you can't do anything about, but what you can do something about is the way that you respond to it and your behaviour. So I think it's actually really important to analyse what went wrong and to look at the part that you played in it and the things that you could have changed. And actually, if you listen to that episode, you'll know that by doing that with my London Marathon experience, I was able to come up with some ideas, some alternative ways of responding to the situation that actually I think I was able to put into practice in Liverpool. And I say in that episode that I was so focused at London on my time and achieving this time that I put everything into those first miles. I probably went off it a little bit too fast. I didn't really respect my body. I didn't really respect the heat. I just kind of went full pelt into getting this time. And I think this time around, I was a bit more cautious. I held back at the beginning. It was difficult because I had all these hilly patches that I had to tackle quite early on in the race. But I think I certainly was a lot more sensible. And when things got tough and when I could see that I was starting to struggle, I wasn't afraid to go, okay, I need to adjust my plan here. I need to possibly take a different course. So definitely some great learning in there. I had a few people actually who contacted me in response to episode 252 who said, you're being too hard on yourself. And, you know, you're self-critic. You need to sort out your self-critic. But I actually feel that my self-critic is my best friend. I think when things go wrong in our life or business, it can be so easy just to say, oh, well, that wasn't my fault. It was just the weather, or it was just something that somebody else did. But actually, when we're honest enough to say, okay, well, these were the factors that I couldn't influence, but actually I could have influenced my behavior, and these are some of the things I could have changed, I think that's really powerful. And that's often when we get great ideas that help us through the next time that we have a problem or a setback. So I did spend a lot of time thinking about the things that I could have done differently. And if you haven't listened to that already, do have a listen to episode 252, because I think you'll find that quite useful. So the second thing that I tend to do when I experience a failure, and I've certainly had quite a few, is I take action. I think when we experience failure, it can be easy to get paralyzed and just think, okay, well, I'm never ever doing that again. And I've seen a lot of people do that with races and marathons. In fact, I've got a few friends who've had a really bad marathon experience and they said, well, that's it. I'm not ever doing it again. But I think that when we take action, when we take positive action, that can often be the best thing that we can do to move ourselves forward. We take that learning and we think, okay, I'm going to take it and I'm going to apply it to what's happened. And I don't think I have actually talked much about this on the podcast, but when I was growing up, I wanted to be a musician. If you'd asked me when I was younger what I wanted to do, I wanted to be a musician. I spent most of my teenage years like playing in bands and orchestras and singing and theatre and whatever. And one thing I always really suffered from was performance nerves. I don't have it for speaking at all. I mean, I do get nervous, but I get nervous in a good way. But actually, I had performance nerves that were almost paralyzing. Like I'd get up. I mean, I still do it now. I can play a piano piece like absolutely perfectly. And the minute somebody comes in and listens to me, I'll start making mistakes. So I had, you know, real problems with performance anxiety. And I think I had some really, really bad performances along the way. I mean, I had like a couple of singing performances, which were just so awful. I had one piano performance where I literally like stopped, like I just went blank and stopped and had to start again. But I always say to people that when you have an experience like that, like literally you just have to stop and your mind goes blank and you have to turn to the audience and say, I'm really sorry, I'm going to start again. And you get through that experience, or you have a bad singing experience. It can't be any worse than that. And I've found that actually when I've hit rock bottom with musical performance, when I've had that awful performance that it couldn't be any worse, that's actually helped me turn a corner, because it's been as bad as it possibly could be. I've had complete public humiliation and it's been awful. But any performance I do after that, it can't be any worse. And I've always found that having that rock bottom, having that real failure experience has actually been a turning point for me. And obviously, I'm hoping the same thing is going to happen with my running, because I didn't just pull out of any old race. I pulled out of a very public race that I'd been talking about for months and months. So actually, things couldn't be any worse than that. And I think that that may well turn out to be a good learning experience for me. But taking action to put it right, like getting into a car after having a car crash, I think that's really important. And two things actually just to relate to business. So when I have a launch, this happened to me recently, actually, I had a launch that didn't go as well as I was hoping. The first thing I usually do is go, okay, right, what did we do this time around that's different to what we did before? Oh, okay, we didn't do that. Oh, right, we only sent 12 emails and we should have sent 14 or whatever it might be. I think when you're brave enough to actually be really honest about what you did and what you didn't do, you can often pick out things that you could have changed, and you can use that learning, you can take action. And in my team, they often say that when something doesn't go quite so well, that is the time when I will get up the next morning and I'll be like, right, okay, everybody, now we're doing this. I've thought about this. I've created this plan. We're doing this. Often I'm at my most creative and my most productive when something hasn't gone right, because it kind of spurs me on to think, okay, what can we do differently? So the first two steps are to analyze what went wrong, and the second one is to take action and to take informed action from what you've learned. This time around, actually, I did something different. So the third thing I think is accountability. So this is quite an interesting one, because for London, I was very, very publicly accountable. I was fundraising. I was talking about London all the time. And in a way, that's what made it worse, because me pulling out of the race was so public. There was no way that I could quietly slink away and not tell anyone what happened. Everybody knew. And I think there's something quite kind of humbling about that, and coming back from that, that I think actually can be really quite good for you. But I had a choice in this situation. Do I tell everybody that I'm doing this again? But in this particular scenario, I decided that I just needed to keep this fairly quiet. And I decided that I told my friends in my running club and a couple of close friends and families. I did mention, if anybody asked me about it, I mentioned I was doing another marathon. But I decided I wasn't going to make it a big public thing. And actually, in this particular scenario, it took the pressure off me. But I think when you're bouncing back from failure, accountability can sometimes be good. Like sometimes actually going out and saying, I'm doing this, can actually spur you on. It really depends. But, you know, I did know that everybody would still be tracking me at home. I did know that my friends from the running club would be having a look to see how I was getting on. So that did add some accountability. But I decided just to keep the pressure a little bit lower, and I didn't tell anybody other than that. The next thing I did, and this is, I guess, you may have read about athletes who visualize their race and they visualize winning their race. So I guess this is kind of like a form of this, but I do this kind of thing quite a lot. But I knew that once I'd finished the race, then I wanted to tell everybody about it, that I completed it, because I knew I was going to complete it, whatever happened. So I knew that I would probably be quite hurried afterwards, because we had to drive home afterwards, and I'd want to share what had happened, and I'd want to share some photos, whatever. So I said to my husband and my daughter, like, please don't share any photos. You can say that we're here in Liverpool. Some people might guess that that's what I'm doing, but please don't share any photos of me before the race or afterwards. I'll do it all afterwards. But I actually sat down and wrote my Facebook post, because I knew it was going to be a bit busy after the race anyway. But I wrote almost like my acceptance speech. So I wrote my thank you speech or whatever. But basically, I wrote down what I wanted to post on Facebook when I completed the race. So it was almost like visualizing my success. I'm going to share with you what I wrote. And I wrote this before I actually finished the race, and I put it on my Facebook page. You can go and have a look. It's Janet Murray UK, my Facebook page. So I wrote this: those of you who know me well, or even a little, know that when I set my mind to something, I have to make it happen. So when I had to pull out of the London Marathon last month, the hottest on record, after suffering problems with the heat, I couldn't let it go. The first thing I did the following morning was to enter the Liverpool Marathon, and I've just completed it in, and I left XXX for a space. I added this bit afterwards, not the time I was hoping for, but in a stroke of bad luck for me, Liverpool is having a heat wave. This bit I had written before. It's not been easy. After months of training for London, I was straight back into long runs of up to 18 miles, but I felt I owed it to myself and all you generous people who supported me in my fundraising for the Ectopic Pregnancy Trust to get out there and finish what I started. This bit I added in afterwards: although not as hot as London, today was way hotter than I anticipated, but I have no doubt that the learning I gained from that experience is what helped me succeed today. And running a marathon in my home city was both an unexpected and special experience. This part I wrote before. Thanks to all of my running club buddies, including David, Sarah, Mike and Mark, for encouraging me and not telling me I was mad. And special thanks to running coach Lynn for picking me up and helping me get back on track. And of course to Ed and Katie, that's my husband and daughter, for coming to Liverpool for the weekend to support me. Katie even ran to the finish line with me. So basically I had the skeleton of that written. It was almost like my Oscar's acceptance speech. But I felt that I did that the night before. And the reason I did it was because I thought, if I actually write this down, if I actually write something that's kind of post-race, I've done this race and I can just fill in the details basically, but I am going to finish this race and I am going to finish it in the best possible time that I can. then there just felt something really positive about that. I was going out on that start line knowing I was going to finish, knowing I was going to be successful. So I guess it's kind of like a version of when they say that athletes visualize their success. I guess it's kind of like a version of that. It's something that I've done before and find quite useful to do. It's like you go in there knowing that you're going to be successful. It's quite a different place to be. So the fifth step of turning failure into success is being able to adjust your plan. So when I'm working on a launch in my business, for example, if we're a week or two in or a few days in and things aren't going to plan, then I reassess and I think, okay, right, things aren't going as I thought. What do I need to change? And that's exactly what I did in this phase. So when I hit 11 to 12 miles and my time plummeted, which is exactly really what happened in London, I thought, okay, right, it's really, really hot today and you don't cope well in the heat. I hadn't talked about this much in the episode. I talked a lot about it in episode 252, but I'm the kind of person that basically can't sit outside for more than 5 minutes. So I know that the heat is quite challenging for me. So I thought to myself, right, okay, we've been here before. It's really hot today and you're just going to have to readjust your expectations. Now, I don't know. I'm going to have to think on this a bit more. Does that mean that I'm giving up easily? Does that mean that I'm a quitter? But actually, I kind of felt in this particular scenario with the experience that I'd had that it was probably the most sensible thing to do. And it was what was able to keep me pushing forward. So I adjusted my race plan partway through. I thought, okay, right. I did a really good first half. So that meant that I had a terrible second half of the race, to be quite frank. It was terrible. the worst that I've ever had. But because I'd been able to put in that good first half and I was able to kind of think sensibly and go, right, okay, I'm going to need to maybe just come off just for a minute and sort myself out. And then, I had to basically kind of have a section where I walked and ran, which is not ideal at all. But my prime goal was to get to the finish line and to get my medal, basically. So I had to readjust. And I think we have to do that in business, in life. And, if we're in the middle of a launch and things aren't working or something new that we're implementing in our business and it's not working, I think being able to go, okay, right, I think we need to reassess and change direction is a really valuable thing to do. The last part of it for me is always about debriefing, and that's what I'll be doing over the next few days. I'm really, really happy that I finished the race. I'm not quite so happy about what happened in between. I had a great first half. Second half was just awful. It was terrible. And thinking about it, I think that maybe in my training, I was away for part of my training earlier on in the year. I was over in San Diego, social media marketing world. Also, obviously, I built up to be race ready in mid-April, the end of April. And then I had to kind of sort of add an extra month's worth of training. I am wondering whether that kind of tired me out because I really did get into difficulty about sort of 16 to 18 miles. I mean, in training, actually, I text Lynn, my running coach, after my 18-mile training run the other week saying, perfect race, because it was absolutely perfect. Perfect on time. I wasn't too fatigued at the end. I knew I could have gone on and finished. So partly, I think, obviously, the heat was to blame. But I also wonder if there are some things that I could do in my training going forward to kind of help me get stronger. I feel like I'm maybe not quite strong enough yet to kind of hit that really tricky patch and keep going at the same pace. And so I think there'll be some reflection for me over the next few weeks and months about how I can build my stamina and how I can get myself to the stage where I can push through those really tricky parts. I do sometimes struggle in races when I get to the last mile or two. I can have a really good race and I can find that I just flag. And this does happen to me quite a lot. So I think there'll be some reflection for me over the next few weeks and months about in my running, like, what can I do about that? Are there some things that I can change in my training or my mindset in order to get better at this? So I hope you found that useful to hear my experience of turning a failure into a success, a relative success. I mean, I didn't hit the time that I was hoping for or a personal best, but I think in the circumstances, getting myself around in one piece feels like a success to me. And I certainly feel like I've got that medal, I've got it done. So I feel a lot happier than I did about 4 weeks ago. And I hope that there were some useful nuggets in there for you about turning around failures into successes. I do this in business all the time. I read something the other day, from an expert who was saying that being an entrepreneur is more about failure than success. And what she was saying is that basically, as an entrepreneur, we fail more times than we succeed. And I just thought, God, that is so true. I fail every single day. But failing, I think, so publicly in a race where it felt like the world was watching and everybody was following me, it's quite a humbling experience and it's a big learning experience. And I've certainly learned so much from that experience. And I'd also like to leave you with this. I just hope that if you're listening and you're going through something challenging in your business or your life and you feel like giving up, I hope that hearing about me struggling through those last miles and kind of going through a really rough patch and a tricky patch and having that failure experience might just inspire you to stick at something that you're finding hard at the moment.
Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you're listening right now. And also don't forget about my podcast guide. So this lists all of my podcast episodes to date. They're categorized by theme. So whatever challenge you're facing in your business, then you should be able to find a podcast episode or in fact, several to help you solve your problem. And you can get that at janetmurray.co.uk/podcast guide. So that's janetmurray.co.uk/podcast guide.